All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk. I am your co-host, Julian, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
How are you doing on this glorious evening that's not as cold as it was last night?
I'm doing well. I just got back in from Boston, and I'm pretty sure I brought the weather with me, because when I left, it was like 78, and then I came back last night, and it was snowing.
Yeah, you definitely brought the cold with you, so I appreciate that. So hopefully it stays as cold for the rest of the weekend, but we're back, guys. We're back on our regular scheduled programming. Today, we'll be talking about a few movie news, and then we're going to talk about Guy Ritchie's latest film, The Gentlemen. But before we get into all that, we got a couple of things to discuss. So let's talk about the numbers from this past weekend. Johnny, what were the numbers?
All right, the numbers. Number one this week, Bad Boys for Life, bringing in $17.6 million in its third weekend, now to $148 domestic. Number two, 1917, back in the top five, with the Oscars coming around this weekend. No surprise there. It's up to $119 million domestically.
Oh, that's not bad.
Number three, the train wreck that is Doolittle, bringing in $7.5 million, bringing its domestic total to $55
million. Wait, before you get there, did you watch Doolittle?
No.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Stink box. Number four, one that I wanted to get out to this weekend because I've heard positive things, is Gretel and Hansel. Brought in $6.1 million.
Okay.
Rounding out the top five, Jumanji, The Next Level, still in there with $6 million, bringing its domestic total to $291 million.
See, that's not bad. Jumanji's still out there racking money up. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we're going to get a third one. But, I digress on that. But, all right, guys, then we're going to talk about movie releases this coming up week, which is Tuesday, February 11th. We have Ford versus Ferrari and Roma, the two movies that I highly recommend watching. Now, we'll talk about this in a moment, but do you recommend buying both of them on Blu-ray?
I would say Ford versus Ferrari, yes. Roma, it's a Criterion Collection, so that might be a buy. I'm not sure. I only watched it once. It's so depressing.
It's a very depressing movie.
Coming out is Takashi Miike's First Love, which I saw at Fantastic Fest, which is very, very good.
Is it really?
It didn't get a theatrical here in the States, but it is very, very good.
Okay. And then I guess we'll talk about next weekend as well. The next week after that, mm-hmm. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Midway, Jojo Rabbit, and The Twilight Zone first season. So out of all of those, I would definitely say
Jojo Rabbit. I actually watched that again on my way back into Austin on the plane.
Such it's on digital movie. Already?
I guess so, because it was on the plane.
Okay. I haven't watched it yet, but you've highly regarded as one of your really good ones. So I'm probably going to have to watch it again. I have still yet to watch it, but on that note, we're going to go into some movie news. Now, for me, just because we're huge Batman fans, we're going to discuss this first because this is going to take the quickest amount of time. Matt Reeves' Batman has been in production for about a week now since time of recording. He took a photo of exactly where he was. I think it was in Wayne's Manor. It looks like it.
Something like that.
Basically the scene, location set, and what take he was on. So it looks pretty nice. I'm excited. Finally in production. It should come out in 2021. No. Yeah, late 2021, if I remember correctly. So
yes.
We're both excited. Huge Batman fans. Excited to see what it looks like. I want to see his costume. I really want to see how Robert looks in the Bat costume.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they're going to try to keep it more comic looking like the Ben Affleck, or if they're going to go to what's traditionally the movie Batman, which is mostly like tech looking, like black rubber or plastic looking, although the Dark Knight trilogy made it more functional.
I was just going to say, it made it more functional and more flexible. Mm-hmm. And to your point, because they're doing more of the detective side of this, I do think that it's going to be more on the tech side instead of it as his comic book origins, but I could be completely wrong. Because, I didn't think the Birds of Prey would look as good as it does, and as from early reviews say that it's the second best DCEU movie. Yep. So
that's the word. The only other real piece of movie news, speaking, so talked about DC news, now a little Marvel news. So we all knew about Scott Derrickson's exit from Doctor Strange 2. Right now, Disney is setting its sights on Sam Raimi to direct the next Doctor Strange movie, which I think is an amazing choice.
It's amazing, but it's a weird choice because it seems like I forgot his name already. He basically wanted to do more of a horror film, right? Mm-hmm. And you basically, he left because of quote-unquote creative differences, of course. Now you're bringing in Sam Raimi, who is basically the king of doing horror, but also putting in comedy at the same time. So it's like you're still going the same route, but I guess you want a more diet version of it.
I don't know. I think so, but I think you have confidence in Sam Raimi if for no other reason than the first two Spider-Man movies were really good, and there were actually several horror-esque like shots and scenes in both of those.
Okay, you're right. So I guess because Sam Raimi has been doing this, and he's kind of the reason why the superhero movies are where they are now, mm-hmm. you might as well just see if he can give you another Doctor Strange movie. Hopefully, he stays and talks and actually makes this film, because it's supposed to come out also in 2021. So, yeah, Disney needs to get up on that very soon.
Yep.
Now, to the last bit of news before we talk about reviews is the Oscars. The Oscars will be this weekend, February 8th, if I remember correctly. We're going to just do some predictions, because we really didn't. We did mm-hmm. predictions on Twitter, but we didn't do any predictions on the podcast, so without further ado, we're going to make our official list right now. What category do you want to start with first?
I mean, let's start at the big best picture. Who do you want to win? Who do you think is going to win?
All right. So, let's go down the list of it. I'm sorry. I'm trying to go. Yeah, best picture. Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time, and Parasite. Who I think is going to win, unfortunately, I think it's going to be the easy choice, which is 1917, just because mm-hmm. of the technical aspect of that film. But who I really wanted to win, like honestly wanted to win, Parasite or Once Upon a Time?
Yeah, I'm the same. I have the same feeling. But is there any movie? Well, no. I was going to say my buddy Brett posed a question for me when we were watching the Super Bowl. He was like, so 1917 is the favorite. Are you angry about that? Does that make you angry? Like, do you think Once Upon a Time or Parasite was so much more deserving that it would make you angry? Like, is it like Green Book?
I was just going to say, is it like Green Book? No, I don't think it's like Green Book. Safe choice?
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is.
Like The Shape of Water, right? Like Shape of Water 2 years ago, I was like, oh, this is a safe choice, but all right. But it's not going to be like, wow, you really gave Green Book the win? That's like, no offense to anybody who loves Ford versus Ferrari, but I feel like the movie this year you would do that to is Ford versus Ferrari. Mm-hmm. It's like, you would really give it a Ford versus Ferrari out of all the great films that came out. That's the, I hate to say it, it's the worst one on the list, but.
No, it definitely is. All right, so, down the line, best director.
Okay, this is, I think it's the roughest one that I'm still trying to get around. You got Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time. You got Sam Mendes from 1917, Todd Phillips for Joker, Martin Scorsese for Irishman, Parasite for Bong Joon-ho. Who I want to win? I want Quentin to finally get a directing win. This would be his, I'm sorry we didn't give you a win for Pulp Fiction, but who I really think they're going to give it to? Bong Joon-ho.
See, I feel like, so I want Quentin, like me, I want Quentin to win because I feel like out of all, he finally needs to get one for yes. directing, because he's gotten ones for other things, but I think Bong Joon-ho will win, even though right now Sam Mendes is the heavy favorite. But I think it'll be a similar situation to like Alfonso last year.
Yeah.
to where, you know, you have a foreign movie director winning Best Director, and that's what when that happened, everyone thought, oh, Roma's going to win Best Picture now.
And I think the same thing is going to happen. I don't think, as you look at all the other award ceremonies, Sam Mendes has been winning all of the director, wins. But I do think Bong Joon-ho, this is his time to shine. I think they're going to give it to another foreign director, as Parasite will win Best Foreign Feature. And I don't, and that's why I was like, I hate to say it, but Parasite won't win this year.
Yeah. All right, here's one that's easy. Best Actor, this one's a lock.
Very much of a lock. So we got Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leo for Once Upon a Time, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin for Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. Unanimously, as everybody's been seeing at the awards, it's Joaquin's award to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is one of those ones where if you bet like $100, you might make like $1.
Basically, like, this is a for sure win. If anybody says anything else, like, oh, all right, that's fine.
The next category, which also seems to be a lock, is Best Actress.
Cynthia Erivo from Harriet, Scarlett for Marriage Story, Saoirse Ronan for Little Women, Charlize Theron for Bombshell, and Renee Zellweger for Judy. I don't think she deserves it, though.
See, the thing is, this was also available on the plane, and I was like, it was a five-hour flight there, five-hour flight back, and at no point in those 10 hours was I like, I might as well watch Judy, see why everybody's saying she's so great. And I was like, I have no desire to watch Judy.
No offense. Love you, Renee. You were a fantastic actress at some point in time. I have no interest in watching Judy. I have no interest in planning to go out of my way to watch Judy.
I mean, she probably will win, and I'm sure there will come a day where I'm like, okay, I need to watch this so I can see. Was it that good that she ran away with the category?
We'll see. I don't... whatever. I guess it's whatever.
All right, next one. We got a lot of locks in a row. Best Supporting Actor. I mean, that's Brad Pitt to lose.
You got Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony for The Two Popes, Al Pacino and Joe Pesci for The Irishman, and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's been racking up the awards also all season long. So it is Brad Pitt's award to lose. And the next one, it's hers to lose as well. Best Supporting Actress, Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell, Laura Dern for Marriage Story, Scarlett for JoJo, Florence Pugh for Little Women, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell. If Laura Dern doesn't win this, I will be very surprised.
Yeah, she's definitely going to win, although I really think Florence Pugh deserved a look for that.
I still haven't watched Little Women, and I'm trying to watch it before the Academy. It's not anywhere I can watch it now in Austin, right?
I'm pretty sure Draft House is still playing it.
Okay.
Right. Original screenplay. This one's a tough one.
This is the rough one. This is the one where I was just like, I feel
it could
like
go either it way. Could go it's this one. I would not place a bet on, because it's either going to be Parasite or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So to his point, you got Knives Out, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time, and Parasite. Once Upon a Time or 1917, Parasite. And I just feel like, I don't know which one.
I feel like Parasite deserves it, because in a linear format, it's a much more complex
and cohesive film.
Whereas Tarantino, you could have written it out and then just done what he does and just move pages around and then been like, okay, now this is the script, but is that really how you wrote it, or did you just, you know, grab some stuff and move it and do your Quentin time jumps? I think Parasite was like, if you sat down and read them, I feel like Parasite is probably the denser, more sophisticated screenplay.
I completely agree.
Adapted screenplay, I feel like JoJo's probably going to take this one.
Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, and The Two Popes. Jojo Rabbit is running away with this one. I think Taika Waititi did a phenomenal job with it. Everybody's been telling me about it. Everybody's been talking about it, even at work. Some of the people who loves watching movies say that Jojo Rabbit is going to be the one to win it. So
yeah, it's crazy that there were literally three Oscar-nominated films at Fantastic Fest last year.
Wow, you're right.
Parasite, Jojo Rabbit, and Knives Out.
God damn it.
And I have Mondo prints for all three.
God damn it.
The next one is has me heated. Best animated.
So, best animated film is going to be... Oh, wait. Lost my way. If you want to go ahead and do it.
Okay. Toy Story 4, Missing Link, Claws, How to Train Your Dragon 3, and I Lost My Body. So, in terms of, like, if you're looking at the betting looks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I Lost My Body's at, like, a plus 2,400. So, okay. You put $50 down on that, and it actually wins, which it won't, even though it is by far the best animated movie of the year. And then How to Train Your Dragon 3, I would put at number 2, and both of those have the lowest odds to win.
You think it's going to Toy Story 4?
Yeah, it's gonna be Toy Story 4. I know Missing Link grabbed a couple animated awards at other shows.
But it wasn't great.
The Academy loves Pixar.
So, unfortunately, I think Disney is in for another lock. I would be stunned, and I mean absolutely stunned, if I Lost My Body wins. But I digress. And
documentary film.
I haven't watched any documentaries this year.
Really ashamed of myself this year. I have not watched any of the 5 documentary features.
I heard
American Factory is really good. I heard Honeyland is good. Honeyland was also available on the plane, but... It's just a lot of movies.
Summer, The Edge of Democracy and The Cave. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, I haven't seen anything, but I'm going to go with what my friends said.
Right now, odds are neck and neck for American Factory and Honeyland.
So I was going to say, if I was a betting man, I'd probably put my money on American Factory.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do. Right.
Next one, also extremely lopsided, Best International Feature.
Which I already told you who I think is going to win. Corpus Christi, Honeyland, Les Mis, Pain and Glory, and Parasite. Which, ironically enough, this is probably the most interesting international feature film nominees for a very long time. Even though Parasite will win this, I heard Pain and Glory is phenomenal. I heard Corpus Christi is also phenomenal. Honeyland and Les Mis, they're good but not fantastic, I've heard. But for sure, not unfortunately, but Parasite is definitely going to be the win for best foreign films this year.
Let's see, best production design.
Yeah, we could do it. The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Parasite.
It's going to be Once Upon a Time.
Everybody has Once Upon a Time in number one, and Parasite as a close second. I don't think that they're going to give...
I think Jojo's probably second in terms of design. Because, like, you look at Once Upon a Time, it feels like you're in
the 60s.
1969 yeah. Hollywood. Jojo feels very much like you're in a small German village. I mean, 1917 looks good, but it looks like any other World War set pieces that you could see out there.
You see anywhere, yeah.
Okay. Cinematography, this one's also a lock.
It's a lock. I can't find the nominees yet again.
1917, Once Upon a Time, Irishman, Joker, Lighthouse. That's a slam dunk. Deakins gets that.
If Deakins doesn't win this, I will be mad at the Oscars and not watch for the rest of the night. Because Deakins deserves it. No matter how many people try to say, oh, you could find the cuts in 1917. You cannot sit here and tell me watching a one take, quote unquote, on a one take film like that and shot as beautifully as it does. So specifically... when one of the soldiers is running in a German-occupied city at night, you cannot sit there and tell me that that's not one of the most beautiful shots you've ever mm-hmm. seen this year. Please, if Deakins don't get this, I'm boycotting the Oscars, which I should, but I digress.
Original score.
Who is for the original score? I couldn't find it.
I'm pretty sure Joker's winning this one. She already won.
She won for a Golden Globe.
1917, if you... Again, betting odds is in second, but not very close. Then Little Women, Marriage Story, and Star Wars.
And the only reason why they're giving John Williams a nomination is because it's the last Star Wars movie he's ever going to do. And then I guess best achievement in music written for motion picture will be I Can't Let You Throw Myself Away by Toy Story. I'm Gonna Love You, Love Me Again by Rocket Man. I'm Standing By With You for Breakthrough. Into the Unknown from Frozen 2. Stand Up by Harriet. If Elton John does not win this,
yeah, that one, it's hard. That one's borderline lock.
So
film editing is all over the place.
What do you...
You got Ford v. Ferrari, Parasite, Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker.
I've seen more leeway with quote-unquote Parasite.
Right now, the betting odds are neck and neck, Ford v. Ferrari and Parasite. And then Irishman in third, Jojo and Joker behind.
Behind. Him. I'll give it to Parasite. I'm going to stay in my lock on Parasite.
And then visual effects...
Endgame, Irishman, Lion King, 1917, and The Rise of Skywalker. I really want to give it to the National Geographic movie this year.
Yeah. Can we? No. Pretty sure Endgame probably
Endgame wins. Is going to win.
Maybe 1917.
You think 1917 is going to win Best Visual Effects?
Right now, odds are it's just behind Endgame.
I think it's going to be Endgame, just because...
Literally, odds are 34.6 for Endgame, 34.5 for 1917.
I'm going to go with Endgame. I'm going to lock mine at Endgame.
Then there's costume design.
I don't know really anything about the costume design, so I'm going to let you take
it. Little Women, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Jojo Rabbit, The Irishman, Joker. Little Women probably wins this one. It would be the only surprise one. That might get it would be Once Upon a Time or JoJo, but I'm pretty sure Little Women takes that one.
Okay.
And
then you want to do best sound editing, best sound mixing?
Sure.
Let's do sound editing first. 4 v Ferrari, Joker, 1917, Once Upon a Time, and The Rise of Skywalker. 4 v Ferrari?
Probably 4 v Ferrari.
And then sound mixing, Ad Astra, 4 v Ferrari, Joker, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Probably Ford versus Ferrari.
Ford versus Ferrari yet again. And I don't think we have any more categories. Much,
yeah. I mean, there's hair, makeup and hair, which is Bombshell, Joker, Judy, 1917, and Maleficent 2. Right now, Bombshell is the favorite, which I understand because they literally made those ladies look just like the actual... real life counterparts, and so yeah, sure.
And other than that, I think that's pretty much it for the nominees.
That's it.
So with that being said, we're gonna go right into our movie reviews, but before we get into the one where we're gonna discuss The Gentlemen, Johnny took us away with the movie, the worst movie of 2020. We thought it was
so far there has been one movie, and I mean, we spoke about The Grudge a little bit and how not great that was and how there were some missed opportunities there.
Yes.
But I saw The Turning. The Turning with Mackenzie Davis and Finn Wolfhard. And this movie was awful. Just going into my review on Letterboxd, A Tale of How Not to Do a Ghost Story, cheap jump scares, wastes of talent, no cohesive direction, it's so muddy that it can't be saved, the ending / epilogue feels rushed and unearned. This had quite possibly the stupidest ending I've ever seen in a movie ever. Literally, okay, the movie supposedly ends, and then you're going to rewind, and then basically replay the ending, but play it out differently, like it was... And this is based off of, you know... an old story, The Turning of the Screw. It was Finn Wolfhard. He was in a different movie because he was actually really good in like the It movies.
Right.
And that he was bad. So was the other, the little girl. The little girl and him were terrible. Poor Mackenzie Davis. I don't know what her
she agent, looked lost at the trailers.
Her agent is doing, because Mackenzie Davis should be a star by now. She was so good as a supporting character in Blade Runner 2049. Even seeing her in her few scenes in that, I was like,
okay,
somebody's like gonna find her. Good job, Denny, finding her. Now her agent just needs to get her some real work. And like, I really enjoyed Terminator. I thought she did a better job at being a female badass in Dark Fate than Linda Hamilton.
I agree.
But, I mean, I bought it. Don't at me. Because I actually enjoyed it. I don't think it's a great movie, but I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. So get off our backs.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so bad. I gave it 1 star. And that's only for some of the effects are kind of cool and Mackenzie Davis, you know, she did okay with what she was given, but I honestly don't know what that director was telling her and the kids to act in, being like, yeah, that's good. You're definitely scared. Or, oh yeah, that was good. That's exactly how a little girl would say those things. It just comes off as fake. It looks, some of it looks made for TV. The story is stupid. It's convoluted, so muddy. Acting's terrible. And I mean, eventually I wanted to be like, okay, yep, you've definitely jump scares coming up right here. There it is. And right here, yep. Loud noise here, yep. So yeah, they when the editing, they were doing that, they were probably like, all right, it's been 8 minutes since our last jump scare. Let's go ahead and ramp up the volume right here.
And so just like The Nun, basically.
Yep, it was really bad. It's right there with The Nun and The Curse of La Llorona. It might even be worse because they were trying to be kind of artsy with it at the end. And instead it was just like, what? Why did you even have that epilogue? That was the stupidest thing. Wait, there's
an epilogue?
A little ending epilogue where you basically rewind it to a scene that happened like 15, 20 minutes before the end, but played it differently where a certain character is a different kind of way, and then we're going to end it with a weird scene in an empty pool that has nothing to do with the actual end of the movie, and then she's just going to look at the camera, scream, and then it's going to end. That was stupid. I was like, what? I was sitting there afterwards with my buddy, and I was like, what was that? We walked out, and we were like, did you
watch the same movie?
Who thought that was a good idea? But yeah, that's enough of that. Let's get to an actual decent movie. A film I saw once 2 weekends ago.
Yeah,
and I really want to see it again just to kind of see how it plays, knowing how things end.
So to your point, so let me give me some background before we jump into this. We're now talking about The Gentlemen. I feel bad. Don't at me. Don't get in my mentions or anything like that. This is my first Guy Ritchie movie that's not a Disney IP.
Okay, all right. So not Aladdin.
Right. So I haven't watched anything that's like, hey, this is an IP. Go film it. Right. So I haven't watched Snatch yet. Yes, I know I have not watched Snatch yet. And his other films, but this was my very first Guy Ritchie movie. And I was kind of put in because there's certain things in the movie that I was just kind of like, wait, how'd y'all get away with this? Which we'll talk about in the movie. But even with some of the things that were quote-unquote problematic, this movie was fun. I didn't think I'd have that much fun in a movie. And we'll talk about the story-driven parts because I think Johnny is going to help me with this, but I really enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the time that I had, and I would love to see it again, knowing the pieces that I know now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really enjoyable. The performances, several of the performances I thought were fantastic.
Fantastic.
My one gripe is I do feel like it could have been better. I feel like 2/3 of the movie are really, really good, but the first act, the first third of the movie, outside Slow. Of the title sequence is really cool.
Yes.
But the first like 30 or 40 minutes is very slow.
So
and you're like, what? We just going to like listen to Hugh Grant telling the story, and then while he tells the story, we're going to do these flashbacks? Like, is that the movie?
So to your point, all right, so this is why I was like, I had to kind of be brought in about a Guy Ritchie movie, because I know that in Snatch, he does the same thing where he cuts it, not in different different time periods and stuff like that. Whereas with this movie, it's not even where he's cutting into different time pieces trying to get you to pitch together. It's a Hugh Grant retelling of a story that we're getting through not just his lenses, but everybody else's lenses. And the first 5 minutes of the movie, I'm like, wait, is this what? Okay. And like I said, I've never seen a Guy Ritchie film besides all the other IPs. And so I'm like, all right, this is how it's going to go. And now we're about to hear a rekindling story. Cool. And like Johnny said, the first 30 minutes, I don't know if this is like this in Snatch, but you're sitting there wondering, like, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm confused. I'm trying to figure all this crap out. And then when you get to the second, act, and third, like, all the pieces start jumbling together. And you're like, oh, this all makes sense now. So I agree with you. If you would have tightened up the first third of it, this movie would be a little bit better than what it was.
I mean, just tighten it up and then, like, get to where you're going quicker.
Because I felt like you were teasing us for a whole 45 minutes, and then we get to the point. You're like, oh.
Yeah, okay. And then stuff starts moving, like the story starts moving forward as way opposed quicker. To, you know, and don't get me wrong, I loved Hugh Grant as this slime ball private investigator who's amazing. Trying to F with mobsters. Like, who does this scumbag think he is? Because the whole time he's doing this, I'm like, and then you're seeing the type of gangsters that he's dealing with, and I'm like, this little weasel really is trying to blackmail these people? Guys.
Out of all of the tabloids, out of all of the people in the UK that you can literally, like, try to blackmail, you want to blackmail these guys over a couple of $1 million? Okay, have fun with that. And how he was piecing everything together was just really cool. And you can tell, honestly tell, Hugh was having a wonderful time mm-hmm. on this. Like, I don't think he's been this unchained off of any role like this in a very long while. Like, unhinged like he is, and it was phenomenal. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every moment of him on the screen. I would say I actually liked Matthew in this, too.
I dug him. I thought that I wish they would have pulled a little more, like, taking some restraint off of his character. Like, there were a few times where you got to see him blow up.
Okay.
But I don't know. I would have just liked, and I understand he is the gentleman, like, he's supposed to be, like, cool, but I would have even liked it if he had, like, some like, southern cool, you know?
I think Guy Ritchie gave him some of that, like, southern, like, coolness. The southern gentleman at certain points, specifically in the beginning, you got that idea of him because he went to school up in Cambridge. Is it Cambridge?
Oxford.
Yeah, you're right. Oxford. And, you know, he's slinging weed and stuff like that. So you're getting an idea of him, but you never get that at the movie when the movie picks up. You just get him as his mobster instead of the gentleman that we were, like, molding and getting an idea of.
Yeah, and I mean, you get to see him, like, rub elbows with, like, the really wealthy people of the country, and, like, it goes more into depth of how, like, how he's able to do what he does, and it's partially because of that. Speaking of other performances, I was pleasantly surprised by Charlie Hunnam, simply because he's always so wooden as an actor, but I think this role really suited him as an actor because he doesn't have to show any emotion because he's just that number two that's like, I don't like what I'm doing, but I'm gonna do it.
Right.
And be super polite and, like, just, yes, sir, and so just go do it.
To your point, like, Christopher, like, you could see when he's wooden in certain areas, but you could see the box opening up just a little bit. I won't discuss this. Well, I'll only preface the scene. I won't go into more details than what it is, but when he's going to grab that daughter and you see him, basically it's like, look, I'm not here to fight anybody. I didn't come here to come and deal with this crap that I'm dealing with right now. I'm only come to go take care of this. And then the whole scene just gets out of hand. Him reacting and dealing with that was probably one of the best, like, moments. I was just like, yes, this is exactly
the way. Because, I mean, they set it up from the beginning before he even goes there when he mentions what part of town it is in and how he doesn't want to go there because it's so nasty. And then
Matthew's like, but you got to do it for me.
You got to do it. And then so you can tell on his face that he's so upset that he has to go to, like, a gross, like, low-class part of town. And even when he walks in that room, he's just, like, not wanting to touch anything.
You could tell in his face that he's just like, all right, I'm here. I'm just going to be
here. And he's just so cool and calm until he isn't. And, I mean, we can talk about it a little in the spoilers, but He gets a few scenes to really like unleash, but I think the fact that that character was written to be a certain way really suited Charlie Hunnam's acting ability.
And that's why I really dig that part, really. And Chris Hunnam, like you said, you when you watch him in certain things, you're like, okay, cool. And you, I don't know, Guy Ritchie, when he makes these kind of like off-the-wall movies, I've hear that people get a little bit more range in their acting. You could tell with Hunnam, you're like, okay, and Hugh Grant, again, you get that. And I hate to say it, I love me some Matthew McConaughey because I'm, you know, graduated from UT. Even now, you're like, okay, you're a little bit unhinged. Beach Bum was cool, but all your other films, I'm just like, bro, I need you to like not have this accent and so melodramatic, and you get a little bit more angst out of him. And
that's one of the things, one of the reasons I love season one of True Detective was you got to have crazy Matthew McConaughey. Like, yeah, he was cool sometimes and crazy sometimes, but you got to keep him like with his regular accent, talking like he normally does. Same thing with Woody Harrelson in True Detective. My favorite, it's a toss up between Hugh Grant and Clive Owen.
Yes,
because Clive Owen as coach
was, oh no, Colin Farrell.
Oh yeah, Colin Farrell, not Clive Owen. Colin Farrell, yes, as coach. If he would have got more screen time, he would have been my favorite. But
he was my highlight.
Yeah, anytime he was on scene, he stole it.
He's like, oh, okay, my kids are idiots. What do I need to do? And him and Charlie Huffman. Like,
I'm not a gangster, but I owe you. So whatever you need me to do, I'll do.
And then, we're not going to spoil it here, but in the ending, when they're getting one of the guys, we're not going to explain it because it kind of coincides with Hugh Grant's character or another character. And you're sitting there watching it, and you're like, oh, God, if I was in Colin Farrell's point of view, I would have been like, no, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. And the way that he just reacts to literally everything that's going on around him, you're just like, I mean,
from the very first scene we see him, where he goes into that place to get some food, and those little punks come in there, and him just handling them.
He's like, oh, come on, really? Are you going to do this?
Like walking up to him with a knife and immediately smacking it.
Like, Colin was one of the highlights of this movie. I need to see him more as that. That was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and not spoiler because it's in the training, but yeah, this guy, Fahok.
Like, Fahok?
Yeah, it's spelled like Fahok. Sounds like Fahok. Fahok. All right, come on, Fahok. Get the Fahok out of the car.
Like, I just cracked up the entire time
him and those, his voice was those there. Suits that he wears and all of his they like kids wear.
I was like,
they're ridiculous, but I was like, they all pull it off. Like these plaid, like leisure jumpsuit.
They were Run DMC 2019, 2020. Like, it was so cool. And I'm like, you know what? Y'all can only pull this off because y'all can't. I'm going to let it slide. Like Colin Farrell looks like an actual dad wearing that flat suit. But it just, all of it meshes really well together. Their whole activity goes really well. Now, no, we can't talk about that because that's spoiler territory. But them boys, speaking of which, I'm just like, okay, all right. We'll discuss what they have part inside the film later in the spoiler territory. But I want to hold on to put a note in that. And I need to remember what rapper or artist was that in that group.
Is it like Muggsy something?
Muggsy something. I don't know his name, but yeah, it's him. And it was just, it was phenomenal watching that because it was something that I never wanted to see. I mean, never thought I wanted to see. And so I was just pretty excited about that. What were some other highlights that you enjoyed about it?
The music, it was shot really well. I think you could have trimmed maybe 10, 15 minutes off of it. But the acting was great. I really dug the way things went down. Henry Golding.
Oh, the kid from Pretty Rich Asians. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought he was fine. Like, but I mean, I understand, like, because of his character, he's supposed to come off as obnoxious
and cartoonish.
Like, you just want somebody to beat the crap out of him. And you know, he has a few scenes, I won't go into it, but you're like, are you really saying that to that person? Like, do you
know who you mess with?
Maybe you haven't heard the story from Hugh Grant. Like, I've heard the story about this lion. But you're really going to sit there face to face with this man and talk to him like that? Same way I felt like about Hugh Grant trying to like blackmail these people. I was like, what is wrong with these people in this movie?
And to his point, like when Henry messes with Michelle Dockery, I think is who I'm thinking about. Matthew McConaughey's wife. Yes. When he messes with him, I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Sorry, little spoiler, but not that much of a spoiler just yet. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Why are you flirting with her? Like, you probably are barking up the wrong tree. Let it go. And he plays the typical, like, I want to push my buttons because I want to be in this kingpin or drug campaign as well. Just like his grandfather, uncle?
Something
like that. Something. Some kind of mentor, father figure to him. And you're sitting there watching, and you're just watching the events unfold. And I will say this. I don't know if this is in Snatch or any of other Guy Ritchie films. Matthew McConaughey's character and being able to be a suave throughout the entire film was really interesting. Was more like, you know, this is the only spoiler. I think this is low-key spoiler. But as an 80s, like, action hero or an 80s kingpin,
that's kind of how Jason Statham came up, was from Guy Ritchie, okay, making him, like, this cool gangster kind of guy
that can't be touched, really. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, okay, all right, that makes sense. So I really enjoy that. Now, real quick before we go into spoilers, is there anything else that you want to discuss before we jump into spoilers? Because we keep tiptoeing around that line.
Yeah, no, I guess that's about it that I can talk about without saying a spoiler. I gave it a 3.5.
I also gave it a 3.5. So far, yeah, best movie for me this year.
That's let's dive into spoilers. So, obviously, spoiler one, the title sequence in the movie opens with what looks like Matthew McConaughey getting assassinated.
Yeah,
shot in the head while he's, you know, having a beer and a pickled egg.
At his restaurant, right?
I guess that's his bar restaurant, because bartender just did what he wanted, or maybe it's just because that's the kind of clout he's got. But yeah, so you're like, whoa,
this is not the movie I was expecting.
And then we start going into that whole storytelling thing, and I was like, no, there's no way that Guy Ritchie's going to tell this story just so at the end of it we can get back to him dying. And then I felt like there definitely was some sort of twist with that opening, which there ended up being, where his number two guy comes in and saves
him. And he shoots him, and shoots the guy who's trying to kill Matthew McConaughey, and gets blood spilled on his pint. So now they're basically driving, because that was the Russians who tried to get him?
Yeah, it was the Russians, which, it's whatever. Like, they weren't really a part of it. They were just kind of dragged in
because of Hugh Grant.
Because of, yeah. And, you know, it is what it is, and it was fine because it added another threat level when you thought that, you know, Matthew McConaughey had just, like, won.
Yeah.
You bring in this other threat, which then you do something kind of kooky to where, oh, that threat got eliminated pretty easily thanks to those jumpsuit kids.
So we were
just idiots. Like, they're really just idiots, because they mess up, and then they mess up again, but inadvertently end up saving one of our main characters by screwing up.
So to your point, that's what I was going to say. I wanted to put a pin in it because I didn't want to spoil it on a non-spoiler part, but these kids are idiots. Absolute dumbasses is the best way I'm going to put it. They go, so to explain it in a better, not in a very short one.
The whole reason them and Coach are involved is because they're idiots.
Literally, because they get a tip from a businessman who...
They got the tip from Fahak.
Fahak, yeah, from Fahak. And Fahak is working with, I forgot his name, but works with Fahak, goes to one of, like, Matthew McConaughey's, like, Weed Farms. Goes and ruins it. Goes messes with it. And you're like, you're messing with the biggest drug kingpin in the UK and you think it's okay. You're dumb. You're absolutely stupid.
Well, yeah, because I guess Jeremy Strong from Succession.
Yes.
Is the cannabis king, Matthew. And he gives the information of Matthew McConaughey's location to
the kids. Henry to Fahak. Golding. And then Fahak gives it to the kids.
Yep.
And that's how the kids went over there and just took a couple of bags of weed and thought it was okay. And then when Christopher comes in and finds him, you're like, okay, all right, we're stupid. These kids are stupid. And the coach is like, all right, we're going to fix whatever mess we're going to. And coincidentally, how in the hell did you know that they were the Russians? How do y'all know how to mess with automatic weapons? I'm not going to discuss this. And you kill everybody besides Matthew McConaughey in that car at the end. Like, I want to explain. I want an explanation.
To be honest, these are also the same kids that are, like, doing, like, internet videos of them dancing and beating up people.
And going and stealing from Matthew McConaughey, which, again, the dumbest thing ever. And had, which was, again, one of my funny moments, when Colin Farrell is telling one of the big heads in the tabloids where Hugh Grant is working for, is like, oh, if you publish this article or, you know, you give the script out, this video of you doing whatever weird crap to this pig is going to go out, and they record it, do a whole music video of it. We never see it. Thank God we never see it. And it's just Colin Farrell reacting to how this dude is completely on some kind of drug and messing with this pig, which is, again, hilarious, but it's just like these kids literally are just the, not the butt of the jokes, but they're the reason for some of the jokes or some of the idiotic things to happen in the story, which was, again, not cool, but it was like, all right, cool, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they were a plot device that was also used to have Matthew McConaughey getting paranoid and basically looking at the wrong culprits.
Yeah. So it was really cool how Matthew, by the three quarters mark, started wrapping everything together and all loose end because he started realizing things. And it was pretty dope. I enjoyed that part of the movie where Matthew McConaughey is sitting and he's discussing everything with that dude and basically gives him ultimatum. And you're like, wow, okay, this is dope. Like, you're ruthless, but you're calm about it. And it's the fact that, it's not even the fact that you destroyed my farm, you tried to kill me multiple times. It's not even about that. But you messed with my wife, which was like a definite no-go. So I'm going to treat you and make you feel 10 times worse than what you are. And I was thrilled, absolutely thrilled with that. So I loved that. What else did I enjoy?
So
I love the banter between Hugh Grant and
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I don't know if they were trying to play it like he's gay and he's hitting on him.
I think he was.
Or is he just a little flamboyant and he's like just kind of giddy because he thinks he's about to get a bunch of money. So he's just like playing him, not realizing that he's actually being played.
I was going to say, I think that they were doing both at the same time, which goes into a little bit of the problematic things that I was going to talk about. But again, it's small things that you can't really get mad about. But Hugh Grant, I think he was really trying to play on the more flamboyant / flirtatious side of it. But, you know, Charlie Hunnam is like, you think you're winning, but you're just like a chess piece.
That's the thing, too, is like Hugh, his character is so worked up thinking that he's about to get all this money that he doesn't look at the small things. Like, what kind of gangster walks in and you're in his home? And you're drinking his very expensive scotch, and he doesn't get pissed? There's probably a reason.
And you think that he doesn't know everything that you're telling him, and you think you're going to get away with selling a script for a couple of million dollars?
By the way, he's not going to mind at all just cooking you up a Kobe beef steak.
Like, yeah, you're dumb. You're absolutely dumb on that one. And the way that basically it all comes full circle.
Yeah, when, and he straight up tells him too, like, why do you think, you know, I didn't get pissed that you're drinking my, why do you think I had the scotch there? Why do you think I even let you keep drinking it? Because I wanted to get you drunk so you would keep talking. And he was like, I had that outdoor grill. I bought that just because I know that that's the kind of steak you like. And I...
So, and I got the money like that. And I want to let you know, you never had this. You always were a step behind. We were just playing you as a chess piece. So let me tell you a story.
Yeah, because he said there was one thing we didn't know, and that was who Dry Eyes was getting his information from. Exactly. So they needed him to get the video footage of him talking to Matthew.
Yeah. And that's all they really needed Hugh Grant for. And after that, Charlie Hunnam was like, we're done with him. Now we're going to take care of the rest. And that's why when he was trying to flee from the airport, and Charlie Hunnam is like, ha, Hugh, nice to meet you. Let me tell you a story. Locks the doors and turns around and gets him to wherever God knows where he's going to be. So it was very, I will say that this movie was very intelligent, and I didn't expect, unfortunately, because again, I haven't seen a Guy Ritchie film, I didn't expect to be as highbrow or as like twist and turns as much as it did. Mm-hmm. And that's what kept me going so much. It was a really enjoyable film because
And I mean, like I said, really enjoyable. What is kind of sad about it though is it's his fourth best like British gangster movie.
See, I haven't watched the other three.
I would say Snatch, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and then Rock and Rolla, and then The Gentleman.
Okay, so I need to watch Snatch first. Okay.
It's kind of how I felt like when I walk out of a Quentin Tarantino movie that's good but not great. I'm kind of like, yeah, it's good, but it's
not his best.
No.
So that's why I felt the way I did.
But definitely worth a watch. And like I said, I really want to watch it again. I don't know that I'll go watch it in theaters again. I might wait for streaming or whatever. But it was really enjoyable.
Really enjoyable, really worth the wait. So I definitely say if you're a Guy Ritchie fan, please go watch it. If you just want to watch a British gangster movie with a lot of comedy in it, go watch The Gentleman. It's very fun, very very fun and very entertaining. And with that, I guess that's it. Now, I know for the next 2 weeks, there's all these Valentine's movies. So this weekend is going to be... Birds of Prey, the whatever the long word of Harley Quinn. We have The Photograph, which is a movie that I really was really interested about with Lakeith Stanfield and Issa Rae.
We got Sonic.
We got
Fantasy Island.
You got Sonic, Fantasy Island, and then Portrait of a Lady Burning, mm-hmm. I think also is coming out.
So also Downhill, which I'm really upset about that one.
Downhill?
Yeah. Will Ferrell, Julia Louis.
That movie! That actually looks really, not funny, but it looks really interesting.
It's a remake of a Swedish film that was at Fantastic Fest 2014 called Force Majeure. It was my favorite movie of the festival and probably my second favorite of that year. Force Majeure is amazing.
Is it the same plot?
Yes, exact same plot.
Okay.
Except for they entirely miscast. Because Force Majeure is a movie that starts out as a comedy, and then it turns black comedy, and then turns into two people who are married that have had their issues, that because of this one event, they're starting to really look inward, like, maybe we shouldn't be together. And they've got their kids with them, and they're stuck in this ski resort, and they're thinking of exploring options. It was the first time I ever saw the guy who plays Tormund,
mm-hmm.
who's in the trailer for Downhill. He's one of the secondary characters in Force Majeure. But Force Majeure, definitely check it out. I think Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus were very miscast and are too old to play, because these are supposed to be characters that are like maybe early 40s.
Oh, I say like late 30s, early 40s.
Their kids are like 8 and 10 or something.
Okay.
So and the guy's supposed to be like good looking, and so is the and like Julia Louis, she's good looking.
She's still good looking for it. Yeah.
But like I was talking with Brett because we both saw it in 2014, and we were like, you needed like a Jason Bateman, like somebody who's like middle aged, or even like a Bradley like Cooper,
Paul Rudd, maybe
Paul Rudd. Yeah, and then you also needed a woman who's like in her 40s but looks like she could be like late 20s, early 30s, to where the husband, when this stuff is going on, legitimately can see like, oh shit, my wife definitely has other options.
Who'd you put in the seat though?
I mean, not a Charlize Theron, but
no,
I mean, in that ballpark.
Okay.
But all I'm saying is it's miscast, and I can definitely tell based on the current Rotten Tomatoes, because it already screened at Sundance, I believe, but it's only at like 14%.
Oh, is that bad?
Well, okay. I've seen the trailer while in a theater, and I've heard many like couples being like, oh, I want to see that.
So, to your point, when The Gentleman came out in Alamo Drafthouse, that trailer came up, and I was like, oh, this sounds...
Downhill?
Interesting, yeah. I was like, this sounds... Interesting. Yeah. I might have to check
Force Majeure. Go watch Force Majeure, people. That's okay. The one to see. But we'll have plenty to talk about.
Because there's Bird five Prey, movies.
Fantasy Island. There's a bunch of stuff.
I mean, do we have to do due diligence to watch Sonic? Can we like...
I feel like at me being a kid of the 80s and 90s,
we grew up playing Sonic. Yeah, exactly.
I feel obligated, especially since... They did go through all of that redesign to please the fans of the original look, which they didn't have to do. And I actually on this show said that it wasn't right that they were doing that simply because now the fans feel like entitlement and all of that
stuff. We both did, yeah.
But I digress. I have season pass, so no skin off my back. It would just be an hour and a half of my day lost. So I guess, see how that, because I don't think there's any Rotten Tomatoes score on it yet.
There isn't none of the films we're talking about, besides Birds of Prey, which is at a 91-92% right now. None of the other ones have ratings. I'm definitely gonna watch The Photograph, which is like a black rom-com. I don't know if I'm gonna watch Sonic, Downhill, or The Portrait of the Lady Burning. I don't. So many movies that's coming out on Valentine's weekend for no apparent reason, but we digress. That's first world problems when you have season pass and AMC Stubbs A-list, so whatever. We're going to leave that alone. But on to things to wrap up. Johnny, where can the kids find you?
So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and you can find my reviews on Letterboxd at Johnny Boy Wonder.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. Thank you guys so much. You enjoy your Valentine's Day weekend if y'all have anything going on. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.